Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Patrick Devin. It is November 15th, 2017. Now, if you guys don't know this, my associate Pastor Ruben's birthday is today. So we want to wish Pastor Ruben a happy birthday. He's been working here for 12 years, or 13 years, I have no idea. But it's been a long time, and knowing me, that I'm very hard to work with, so it's lucky that someone's actually worked with me more than 1 year. So today, I'm interviewing Reverend Al Johnson, a.k.a. my ministry buddy. Now, how long have we known each other for?
Forever and a day.
Forever and a day. Over 20 years.
Over 20 years.
When we met, you were the senior pastor of what church?
Greater Love Ministries.
Okay.
In Hawthorne.
On Hawthorne. And we used to kind of get together with two other pastors.
Yeah, we used to get together. It was me, you, Bob, Richardson, John Richardson, and
the other pastor you used to be at LA Second.
LA Second, yeah.
I forget his name.
You hadn't have said anything, I would have been able to... Clarence Marks.
Clarence, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how we met, because we used to get together like once a month for lunch and getting together. And we had a combined service. I think it was a New Year's Eve service of some sort.
Yeah, we used to have a New Year's Eve service every year.
Yeah.
And we used to get together. We tried to make it every Friday. We would get together or at least every other Friday,
yeah.
Get together and we would talk about being a pastor and pray for one another and try to have spiritual moments.
Yeah. But we ended up making fun of each other.
Yeah, we make fun of each other, talk about people, talk about ourselves. Then God make us feel guilty about it and we start talking about God.
So then you resigned from being a senior pastor. About, what, 10 years? No, longer than that.
Yeah, longer than that. I mean,
about 18 years ago?
Yeah.
17 years ago?
No, it wasn't that long ago, but
okay.
I resigned when I, like 2 years after, maybe even 5 years after I moved to Corona.
Okay. Now, that's a long drive.
Oh, yeah, I was doing it 2, 3... Sometimes 4 nights,
right?
4 days in the week. And I was dragging my family and my wife, and we're doing that. And that's a long drive, and that was before I had Fast Track. And
yeah.
Oh, man, it was a nightmare. 2 hours, hour and a half.
So then you resigned, and I think you started going to Rancho Cucamonga.
Yeah, I started going to CCF.
To church like that.
Yeah.
And so now you're back at our church, I shouldn't say back at our church. Been attending our church for 3 or 4
years.
Three years. Okay.
My wife is better at the numbers.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I'm very impressed, and I talked to you about this before, was tell us how you met your wife, because you have this outstanding relationship that I'm very impressed with.
Well, you want the truth?
No,
or
just totally lying.
Fairy tale. Because it's very interesting. I knew my wife, but we didn't really know each other.
Okay.
I thought my wife was a chicken head. Yeah, I thought she was just loud mouthed and crazy. And buck wild. So that's what I thought of my wife.
Okay. Right?
Wasn't my wife.
That's your first impression.
Yeah, but that's, okay. Remember, you know, that's in junior high school,
right,
when I see her.
Oh, you've known her since junior high?
I knew her, but I didn't know her.
Okay.
And she's a pretty girl, so I'm like, oh, she's fine. And, oh, she crazy as...
like a chicken head.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so my wife loves to laugh.
Right.
Oh, she... Man, she loves to laugh.
Okay.
And I used to be more serious.
Mm-hmm.
And now you notice I laugh a lot now, right? So, yeah, that's another story. But that's junior high. In the 11th grade, mm-hmm. She was in the 10th grade, and we had an Algebra 2 class together.
Okay.
And so I sat next to her. And it's a crazy story. I was trying to be friends with this girl that was sitting in front of me.
Right.
She sat on this side of me.
Okay, on the right side.
On the right side of me. And so I really didn't start paying attention to her. One day, the lights in the classroom fell from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And so me, you know, I'm this guy. I take everything, you know, grain of salt. Okay. I'm slow. Very slow. Methodical, right? So the light's falling. I move over a little bit, let it fall. All of a sudden, I'm getting knocked out of the way.
Okay.
It's her.
She's
pushing me out the way. Okay. Mind you, she's pushing me out the way because I'm in the way. She don't want to get hit by the lights.
Okay.
But she tells everybody, I saved his life.
and everyone's thinking, I was too slow to move. Okay.
I'm like, I'm not in danger here.
That's good. Save the kid's life. That's too slow.
So she tells her friend that, you know, she likes me.
Right.
And, you know, I have my preconceived ideas.
And this is being a sophomore in high school.
Yeah, she was a sophomore. I was a junior. And so she tells a friend. And so she gives this guy, man, she's crazy. I'm telling you. She gives this guy two dimes.
Okay.
And the song by Sky was out, call me if you need someone to talk to.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. So she gives me two dimes. Call me. There's no excuse. Oh, right. Here's two.
This is before cell phones, so you would have to go.
Cell phones.
You would have to go to a payphone.
Payphone, you know, she's assuming, you know, maybe that's don't have a phone.
That's
whatever.
A good little line.
But mind you,
that's a slick
you
line.
You know Lillian, right?
Yeah.
Lillian is like this passive aggressive individual. And it still flabbergasts me to this day that she, you know.
You're right.
She liked me that much that she went after me. And when maybe I say she went after me, she went.
She thought you were like a car wreck. She was just interested.
Ah, man.
Like slowing down and trying to figure you out.
I haven't told the rest of the story.
Okay, go ahead.
So I said, no, I'm not interested.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, I did. I told you I thought she was a chicken head. So...
You know she'll listen to this, right?
Huh?
You know she listens to the podcast.
Oh, dude, I have no secrets.
Okay.
If I'm saying it, that means I don't care. When I don't say it, that's when it's a secret, right? So anyway, I tell this guy no. And she tells him, tell him to call me.
Okay.
And so I start, she literally started talking to me. I'm like,
really?
Whoa, this girl is.
She knows what she wants.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's complete opposite of how she is. I'm telling you. It's like, we go do... Nah, you do.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm like, what is it? Why did you come after me so strong like that?
Because it's not like her personality.
Yeah. And I don't share this story. Now it's going all over the whole internet now.
It's only six people hear this.
Yeah.
And I'm four. I listened to it four times, so.
So eventually I called her.
Okay.
And we talked. And I started walking her home.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, hey, you know, I have a girlfriend.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
She said, quit her. I'm like, uh-oh.
So most people would say, out of respect,
Kevin,
they would go, okay.
This gets deeper. I was in the chess. I was in the chess club.
Okay.
I was part of the drafting.
The methodical thinker. See, chess. Got
it. I was part of the drafting, you know, that was what I wanted to be.
Okay.
And I was a band, in the band.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, you ready for this?
All right. You were in the band, the marching band.
Marching band,
what did
yeah.
you play?
Trombone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you still play?
I haven't played. My lips probably start burning up if I try.
Okay, so you played the trombone in the marching band in high school.
Yeah, and so, you know, I was a popular guy.
Right.
So we started talking, and we eventually, I broke up with my girlfriend.
Right.
We eventually started dating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now she's in drafting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But you don't get it.
I get it. Is she possessive? Is that it? Like,
no, she's not possessive.
Okay.
But when she wants something, she goes after it.
Yeah.
And so Kevin, she never drew a line in her life. I used to enter this contest, these contests at Carson Mall,
right,
at these shows where you show off your stuff, and I would, you know, win first prize, right, second prize, grand prize, you know, doing all these drawings and stuff. And so guess who started being in that? Lillian. I'm not kidding you. She was good. I'm like, that's not fair. But then she joined the band.
She joined the band
she
too?
She joined the band, never played an instrument in her life.
Okay, so she actually, because you were drafting, she drafted.
Yes.
You were in the band, so she
joined the band. Yes. We were inseparable.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but guess what? She never read music in her life. She learned how to read and became first chair.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding you.
Oh, good grief.
I'm not kidding you. The girl got skills, so that's why at my old age, I'm like, dude, I got a diamond, dude. This girl is bad. But anyway, so... No, I actually realized that some years ago.
What? Seriously. Because you've been married how long now?
Oh, man, we've been married since 1988. So we've been married 29 years, going on 30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have your 30th anniversary. And we've been dating
forever, since we were kids. Because we're
sophomores and juniors in high school.
Yeah, I'm like 15, 16 years old.
So that was
in
the early 80s.
Yes, 81, 82.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that I noticed about both of you, especially you, you have a deep, deep respect for your wife. And I've noticed...
She the boom!
Well, the thing is, what I've noticed, and I get that, but most men I've seen that don't treat their wives as special as you treat... Where did that come from? Did you learn that from your parents, or you just... Because I don't think it's a natural thing,
so
especially
we got married
29
young.
Years later.
Think about it. We got married young. So there was a lot of craziness, right? A lot of learning who you are. And we decided to have kids early.
Right.
And so we had kids. Our son, Alfred, was born, you know, 9 months and 3 weeks. Or something of that nature. Not my phone.
No, you know, it's a stupid alarm. Okay.
So, we were young. So, there was a lot of fighting.
Right.
A lot of fighting, a lot of...
Between you and your...
Yeah.
Okay.
Between me and Lillian.
Right.
Trying to, you know, who the boss, okay, and everything. And, you know, I came from that side that you're mentioning, that different how men are.
Right, like my way or the highway.
Or the highway, yeah. And, you know, the man's the boss and everything.
The dominant factor.
And, you know, I started realizing, wait a minute, this girl's good.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, I read a lot. So right. I was reading books and reading. I'm sorry, hey, that's me.
Right.
That's me. And I was losing my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I was literally losing her because I was running her away and not treating her special.
Right.
And so...
So this is not...
I had an aha moment.
Okay.
Where she just straight out told me, I'm doing this by myself. I might as well do it by myself. I want a divorce.
Well, that's an aha moment.
Yeah, that's a ha-ha moment for me.
That's a slap in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
See,
it's
most men don't get it until they're gone.
Yeah, you're right. And emotionally, she hadn't left yet.
No.
Usually,
she was leaving, though.
Because usually what happens when people leave, a woman leaves emotionally before physically.
Yeah, she was leaving emotionally. Okay. She was leaving emotionally.
And so she flat out said, I'm done. I'm doing this by myself.
Yeah, church, between this. This was like, oh, man.
How long ago was this?
Man, this was like in the 92.
Okay.
Maybe 5 years into our marriage, something like that.
Okay.
So 93.
So this aha moment, did you...
I'm like, I told her, go then.
Or did you really?
Yeah, I did. Then I realized, wait a dang minute. Wait a minute. Because she treats me like a king. Right. Lillian does everything for me, dude.
Right.
I mean, I couldn't ask for a better wife.
Okay.
I mean, she treats me like a king.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized, I'm like, wait a minute, dude. this is my girl.
Okay.
This is, I'm a jerk. I'm being a jerk to her. Mm-hmm. And it was almost too late. I'll be real with you.
Okay.
I mean, it almost was too late. And so I changed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she don't believe it, right? Yeah. You know.
Well, of course.
And so, you know, I'm making her my queen.
Right.
I said, I'm going to treat her as if she's my queen, intentionally. And okay. So what you're seeing is the results of those decisions way back then. And I'll be real with you. I didn't reap the benefit of treating her special until many, 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 many years later.
That's important for men to hear that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they go, oh, I'm sorry, and they change their behavior for a week, and then wonder why the wife, why am I doing this?
They don't believe it.
Yeah.
You've been a jerk for all these years, and then all of a sudden, 2 weeks, I mean, let's be real, the woman think you're trying to, you know, you want to get some or something, you know, you're doing that for a return.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm treating you this way for a return on that investment. Right. I'm making an investment, but I treated her that way because that's how God. And I think it was something I heard on Focus on the Family or whatever.
Okay.
And I said, you know, treat her like a king, so like a queen,
right,
which she is. Treat her as God treats her.
Right.
See her as God sees her. And God sees her as a treasured
absolutely
a daughter.
Yeah.
His treasure. And so I started treating her like that. And so that's how I treat her.
Because my grandfather said to me, treat Jennifer as a gift from God.
Yeah, because she is.
Yeah.
Your wife, my wife, is a gift from God.
Yeah.
Perfectly matched, perfectly. Dude, deserve her. I don't deserve her.
Well, you know Jennifer. Do you think I deserve her?
No. Just like I don't deserve them.
You know,
it's definitely
a deep respect.
She says the same thing about me. And I remember the first time I heard her say that, it actually blew me away. Yeah. It melted me. It really melted me.
Well, it's showing that as someone's character can change.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Yeah, dude, you know, it does.
Yeah. So, you know, going through this, you have a daughter. How old is your daughter?
Very old. Not really. She's 12.
20.
She 12.
Emotionally. I'm talking about physically.
12. Jasmine is, 20-something.
Okay, the point... Good night. Were you there?
I know how old she is. You're not supposed to tell her age, man.
Okay, I get it. But all of a sudden, because you know how males think.
Yeah.
Like, are you very protective now when she dates or anything? Or how do you deal with that?
How do I deal with that? I tell her... I basically tell her, hey, don't settle.
Okay.
I try to communicate to her, don't settle. If they can't treat you right, they don't deserve
right.
you. But that's hard. I mean, this generation got it hard.
Oh, I know.
It's very difficult because people don't like to be by themselves.
Right.
And you see other people getting married. And, you know, you see all this stuff. And it's tough, man.
Right.
It's a tough thing. And so you settle or you do this. But I communicate to her, hey, he needs to treat you special because you are special.
Yeah.
You know, you are special.
No, and I think that's important. I think if I was a parent of a female or I had a daughter, I would just be going crazy.
Yeah.
I would be just going
crazy. Yeah, I try to tell her and I try to tell, you know, communicate, you know. I'm a preacher. I'm an elder.
Yeah.
And I always will be that because that's what God has called me to be. So whether it's free or in prison, I guess I'll be starting a prison ministry if someone messes with my daughter.
No, I'm not playing.
I'm serious.
I know you're serious. Now, let me jump forward because I want to talk on another subject. Now, this is my little lead-in. Now, if you're listening to the podcast, Al and I, a few years back, Al had an EV, electric vehicle, and I had an electric vehicle, and I still have it. Al kind of sold his after this trip. And
Here you go.
And the thing is, you had a
Honda Fit EV.
Yeah. And I have a Kia Soul EV.
Yeah.
And we just decided, out of the blues, and we planned it for about a year.
Yeah, we talked about it, and then we planned it, and then we talked about it.
Yeah, and then put it off a couple of times.
Put it off a couple of times because you stood me up. Kevin stood me up, as usual. Made other plans with other people.
That was in May. That was a May one. But we went 2 years ago in January.
Yes.
Over Martin Luther King weekend.
One of the best times I've had in my life.
Yeah. Now, both my car had a 95-mile range. Yours had an 85-mile range.
Right, right.
And yours did not have fast charge.
No fast charge.
Okay. So we committed ourselves, you and I, to drive to San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And that means to charge, it would take 3-4 hours every time we charged. So you figured out the math. It's about 400 miles to San Francisco.
And we figured out we can get half charges by charging. Yeah, that worked out a little bit.
So we left like at 7 in the morning, and this is when Al was 100 pounds heavier than he is now.
Yeah, about 150.
100 what?
150.
150?
Probably so.
You lost 150 pounds. We'll get on to that. But Al could not walk far.
No.
Because
his knee,
and they were looking at surgery. So we got to King City, California at 11 at night. Yeah. We left at 7, so we're only talking about 200 and some miles. It took us much longer than we thought it would take, right?
Right, right.
And so this city, King City, if you look on a map, it gave both of us the creeps.
Yeah, it's a creepy place,
and
man.
They had one charger, so I went ahead and I charged for an hour and a half during the night. While Al was charging somewhere in, I forget the name.
Salinas? No.
No, it wasn't Salinas. But anyway, it was
Santa Maria, some place.
Some stuff. So then when you came up, then I went 40 miles north to charge at another place.
And you're going to wait there for him.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I had to leave Al.
Yeah.
And I was, for some reason, I was feeling this, oh my goodness, this is the first time I've ever felt this way with you. He's a black man stuck in this little podunk of a town. And when I left, you said to me, don't worry about me. I'm not doing anything wrong, which made me worry the most.
I'm squeaky clean.
Yeah, I'm squeaky clean. So I go get there and I call Al, not knowing Al fell asleep.
Yeah, which I actually passed out.
Yeah, passed out. He fell asleep. Told me he doesn't sleep in the car. That's what you said.
I don't.
I don't sleep in the car.
No.
So just constantly calling. And everything in my head, white supremacists, Nazis,
they got him.
I was so freaked out.
Yeah. Chuck, let me tell you how freaked out I was when I woke up. I didn't realize where I was.
Oh, really?
I'm telling you, I'm like, I woke up, I'm like, whoa, what the heck?
And the ambulance driver,
and the guy, I look over, and this guy is looking at me, man. I'm like, dude, you don't want to come over here.
But this was the first time you and I talked about racial differences.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because we've never talked about it before.
Right, right.
And I think you told me we never had to.
Right. Never had to. Never was a reason to.
Yeah.
You're my brother. I'm your brother. We cool.
Yeah. So I was thinking I could learn a lot from Al. And because us white people, speaking for myself, we have privilege. And I've just been aware of my privilege 4 years ago. When someone says you have privilege. And people with privilege don't realize it's privilege.
Kind of take you off when someone say that.
Well,
too,
it's
though.
Funny. It made me think. And then I realized, absolutely. And how I found out, white privilege, it was, what was his name? He was part of our church, and he was black. And he goes, I'm sorry I'm late. I got pulled over. And I go, for what? And he says, nothing. And I go, I've never got pulled over for just nothing.
And he laughed at
me. And no, he looked at me and says, because you're white. And then that was 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
And then it started clicking. And then once you start thinking about it, you go, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
White people have white privilege. So I want to ask you this question. Is when did you first discover, and I think a lot of white people need to be asking this question.
When I discovered.
When you first discovered you were black.
I discovered when I was black. I was a little kid. Probably, I would say, less than 5. I wasn't in kindergarten.
Okay, so it was early.
Yeah, maybe 4, okay. 3 or 4. And my little brother, we were in Huntington Park.
Right.
And Huntington Park is nothing like it used to be.
Okay.
As it is now, as it wasn't back then.
Oh, really?
So it was majority white mm-hmm. in Huntington Park. And so we were getting, I believe we were getting him some shoes or something. And I may have been 5, because I'm thinking about it. He was singing James Brown. Say it loud.
Oh, really?
I'm black and I'm proud. Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. And my mother ran over and got him. Said, boys, close your mouth.
Oh, he really?
Says, Mama, say it loud. Junior, say it loud.
Hey, okay.
And so she's like, boy, be quiet.
Okay.
And, you know, it's drawing attention. Everybody's starting to look.
Because you were kids. You were just
kids singing yeah. James Brown, man.
James Brown.
Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud.
You were dancing like that, too?
Oh, dude.
For the podcast.
Probably jumping up around.
I was really moving in the seat.
And so I still remember that. We were little kids, man. And so she grabbed him, picked him up, and took us to the car and said, don't say that. And then I'm like, why you can't say that? We always sing that song. Uh-huh. That's what I'm thinking.
Right.
And, you know, I'm always processing. So mm-hmm. I'm like, we can't say that because they don't like us saying that.
They don't like us?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, why they don't like us saying that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're black. I'm black. I'm black. I'm different.
Okay.
And so that process started. But not really
about 4 or 5.
Negative, not positive either.
Right.
Just the realization that your people consider you different, or you consider yourself different.
Right.
It's weird.
Well, you know, let me ask you this question too. You know, we have the, you know, NFL taking knees, and then we have these people posting things on this Facebook as a profile picture saying, I'm going to stand and all this stuff. And they kind of not make it about what they're protesting, and they're making it about disrespect for America.
Right.
And what do you think, if white people would just get this or understand this, or can they ever get it, what would that be?
Protest is not supposed to make anyone feel comfortable. Even the person protesting is uncomfortable. People try to say, you pick what you protest, and you should, you know, be more aware. Look, if I'm protesting, I'm going to pick what's uncomfortable for the people to cause an uproar so everybody listen to what I'm protesting about.
Right.
Well, the spin is no one's really paying attention, because the spin masters is making it about the flag and about the anthem.
Right.
You know, even when the guy Colin changed and from sitting down, he took a knee.
Right.
And kneeled. They still don't recognize that. The issue is people don't want to talk about the real issue because they're uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
People getting killed, shot, beat up,
mm-hmm.
harassed because of the color of their skin is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We're in 2017 and this mess is still happening. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a problem with people kneeling, protesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we should be protesting.
Right.
We should be saying something. We should be saying, hey, this mess needs to be overhauled mm-hmm. and dealt with.
Yeah.
Whether you're comfortable with it or not, because that's not stopping my brothers and sisters from being shot up, beat up, or harassed.
Right.
To make someone else feel comfortable. The same people, I mean, get real. Let's be real.
No.
You know, I've been to games. Mm. The same people that's talking about disrespecting the flag is running their mouth while the anthem is going on.
That's true.
They're talking while it's going on. Wearing their hats while it's going on. Right.
Or, and I've seen people really, wearing clothes that are like the American flag.
You're not supposed to have any type of representation or symbol of the flag in a clothes, handkerchief, none of that stuff. You're not supposed to have that.
Yeah.
And you see it all the time, you know. You see people in pants, shirts, bags. That's disrespecting the flag.
Yeah. No, I definitely, and I think you're right, because if the white people and different races would just have those uncomfortable talks and just accept, like, because I think white people really need to get involved in this too, that they're coming alongside.
Everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, you know, it's going to take a united effort.
Right.
To change. I mean, it just can't be, it never works with one, you know, race or group of people doing something. We have to come together to make changes. And, you know, it behooves all of us to do that.
Yeah. No, absolutely right. And I think it's good that you even started talking about within the church as well. And I've had people leave the church because I mentioned it on the sermons. And stuff like that.
The question is why? Why?
Because they feel uncomfortable. They feel uncomfortable because if it doesn't affect me personally, then it's not a problem.
Yeah, and that's a deal with people processing it as well. I mean, if this could never happen to me, I have difficulty understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm rich and there's never a chance of me, you know, getting poor or not having clothes or being homeless and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm not able to really process it and understand and have sympathy and empathy for people who are dealing with that. Right. It's like, get a job or make money or get money, whatever. Right. You know, it's not, if there's no way for me to experience that, and if I haven't experienced it, without effort, without really talking to other people and comprehending that situation, you can't process it, right? No. You can't. You can't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing another jump too, because we can't solve this whole issue.
No, we can't solve.
But we can make it aware, make it real, and I think it starts within the church as well, because a lot of churches, you know, with the exception of our church, a lot of churches are very segregated.
Church is the most segregated place on the planet on every Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
Think about it.
No, that's why I mentioned it, because the segregation has to stop within the church, within the body of Christ.
What is heaven going to look like?
Very segregated.
Yeah.
It's going to be very colorful.
Yeah.
Very colorful.
Yeah.
And needs to.
That's one of the things I appreciate about our church, really. I'll be real with you.
Mm-hmm.
I brag about it all the time. I invite people here, come to our church. You'll fit in.
Yeah.
And say, don't judge our church by me, because it's a whole bunch of us there. You know, we have white, black, brown.
Got everyone.
Every color you can think of on the rainbow. Yeah. Every race, every nationality, every gender.
Absolutely. And sometimes there's a little friction. And I wouldn't say racial friction, but it's just, there's always friction within a family.
You tell me there's no friction at the segregated churches?
Yeah. There's definitely segregation at the churches. Hey, let's jump over to your spiritual life. Because as long as I've known you,
I'm a heathen.
As long as I've known you, you have a deep faith in Christ. And usually it's it's different with other pastors. Because a lot of pastors, they act pastoral type, and, you know, they do the language and stuff like that. But you're very authentic with your walk with the Lord and very deep with your walk with the Lord. And I think that goes back to the beginning of the podcast. You're slow and methodical. You're slow and methodical in your spiritual life, too. Once you begin to believe something, read something, then you apply it, and it's who you are. Mm-hmm. That's what I've seen in the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's my gifts. My first love is learning. Mm-hmm. My second love is application. So if I learn something, I'm going to test it on you.
Okay.
So I've learned about God, and I've tested it, and it's proven true.
Okay.
And so God's proven true regardless of humans.
Because I've seen you talk to some people that when they have a misunderstanding of Scripture or a misrepresentation of Scripture, that you kindly go, well, wait. This is what it's talking about. This is what I've learned about it. And you challenge people
to test it for themselves.
Yeah, to test it for themselves. So I'm asking you if somebody was coming up to you and say, look, Al, I really want to believe that God loves me and God cares deeply for me. But you know what? My life has been hard. It's been unfair. It's been sucky at times. It just, things don't go out right. So how in the world do you tell me that God is love and God cares deeply about me and He loves me, He died on the cross? I just don't see it. Now, this is a question I'm asking you. I never asked you in advance, so it's probably maybe a hard question, but for you, because you're a thinker, a methodical thinker, how could a person begin to take the steps? Like the first thing they would acknowledge or process or learn or apply to begin the journey of understanding who God is.
I mean, if they're real and they really want to know the truth.
Right.
Their experiences and what they've gone through, what difference is it from what Jesus went through? And He's God in the flesh.
Right.
He hasn't done anything wrong. He hasn't said anything wrong. He's hasn't even sinned.
Right.
Look what He went through. Betrayal, loss.
Through His friends.
His best friends.
Yeah.
His family.
The kiss of death. Or whatever.
You know, betraying with a kiss.
And
betraying someone with a kiss, man.
And also, too, unanswered prayers. In the Garden of Gethsemane.
Well, yeah, and think about it, man. He got put to death.
Right.
He died.
Yeah.
Not pretend die, not almost. He died for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So he suffered great loss, haven't done anything for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between you and him?
That's a good point.
So this is what our God went through.
Right.
And so I wouldn't say it as harshly as that.
Right.
But let's think about
it. But I get it.
So if God Himself went through that trouble, we are going to go through trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Trouble doesn't dictate who God is. Trouble, experiencing hurt and loss, doesn't dictate who God is.
Mm-hmm.
God dictates who He is. And what He does dictates who He is.
Right.
And we know for sure that God personally became a human, which is a humiliation in itself.
Right.
And
gave up all His rights.
Gave up all of His rights.
Yeah.
And another humiliation.
Yeah.
And He died for us.
Right.
He lived the life that we couldn't live, another humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, He went through all this for us. That's a demonstration of true love.
Mm-hmm.
We killed Him.
Mm-hmm.
And He still loved us and died for us. He sacrificed Himself and did what we couldn't do.
Right.
So He's like, gives us this guarantee and promise.
Right.
Then He becomes the guarantee.
Right.
And then He fulfills the requirement of the promise.
Mm-hmm.
And say, here, the promise is fulfilled.
Right.
You can have it.
Okay.
That's God.
Oh, man. Absolutely. So one last question while we wrap it up. And I think you and I had this discussion. I'm just thinking that we had this discussion. Let's say a person listening to the podcast is really struggling with resentment and bitterness, which is the result of a lack of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about, oh, you need to forgive. And when people say you need to forgive, the person that needs to forgive is thinking, okay, I just needed to say what you did was okay. What you did is fine, and I don't need to do it. So we have tendency to hold on to anger, resentment for a long time. So I think you've even told me, because I've kind of opened up to you about my issues with my dad, and you just flat out said, you were talking about the power of forgiveness.
Yeah.
So how... what would you say when someone's holding on to resentment, unforgiveness, and basically waiting for them to ask for forgiveness or waiting for them to make restitution, then I'll forgive?
Well, first I try to understand, you know, what they're going through.
Okay.
And then you don't really want to fight dirty.
I don't want to fight dirty. You really want to he's resentful.
You want to get back at them, really?
Oh, okay.
Forgive them.
So what you're saying is, if I want to get revenge, forgive them.
Forgive them.
Well, how does that work out?
But,
tell me.
How does that really work? Because forgiveness is for you.
Okay, for me.
It's for you, really. Okay. Honestly, it's
right.
When you really boil it down.
It's not for them.
Forgiveness is for you.
Okay.
It benefits you. It benefits the other person, yes.
Right.
But it really benefits you.
Okay.
Because you're not holding this stuff anymore. Honestly, you're holding the resentment. That other person is carefree, lippity-loppity.
Right.
Skippity doo da day. I ain't even thinking about it.
Skippity doo da day.
Yeah, man. But you, on the other hand, right, think about it every day.
True.
Why are you letting them get back at you? Yeah. Because they kicking your butt over and over every day.
Yeah, you're reliving.
Why don't you kick their butt and forgive them?
Okay. And so, see, this is my definition of forgiveness. The result, if I've forgiven somebody, it's basically I remember it, but I don't feel it.
Yeah, agree or not? You gonna forgive? You gonna feel it?
Because forgiveness connecting with the emotional feeling, or is it separate?
It's connected. It's all connected.
Okay.
It's impossible for it not to be connected, but. If you think about it, if I'm forgiving someone for an act they did against me, I'm not holding it against them.
Right.
I'm not having that resentment towards them.
Right.
Am I going to open myself up for them to do it again to me or hurt me again?
Right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with setting boundaries and making sure someone can't do said acts against you again. Mm. But you have to be careful that you're not resenting that person. So it takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
You have to process it. It's a process.
Yeah.
But you got to forgive the person because it frees you.
Right.
As long as you're holding that resentment, you're in bondage.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're in bondage. You are actually in bondage by that same person who did the act against you.
Right.
But now you're helping them.
Yeah.
By not letting go. You have to let go.
Right.
And it's different. It's a process.
Absolutely.
It's a definitely difficult process. It takes healing. It takes God's movement. It takes prayer.
And time.
It takes time.
Yeah.
And that thing about time and all that, man.
Well,
you have to work at it.
Yeah.
It just... saying letting time pass by and you'll forget.
Right.
No,
right.
It doesn't work.
No.
You have to intentionally work at forgiving someone, and you really have to take those steps intentionally
Absolutely. And I don't believe forgiveness is a one-time act. I think sometimes it's over and over.
Yes.
That situation.
I've made a decision to forgive you, and I'm forgiving you. You are a nutcase. I forgive you.
Yeah. And it's constantly.
I forgive you.
Well, thank you so much, Al. I really appreciate this. And, you know, the thing is, I'm so frustrated because we didn't have time to talk about your weight loss.
I lost 120 pounds officially, but that's when I weighed myself. Before I got on the scale, I was a bit heavier. Yeah. But I refused to get on that sucker.
And the thing is, we didn't talk about your children and stuff like that.
They drive me crazy. I love them, though.
How many children do you have?
I have three kids.
Three kids.
Two boys, one girl.
Okay. And so we'll get it done. So if you see Al joins us on Sundays at 10 o'clock on our Sunday service. So if you see him and Lillian and you need some marital advice,
don't ask us. We'll mess up your marriage. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, I'm willing to share anything.
No, it's good.
Yeah,
so,
it's all good.
So join us Sundays at 10 o'clock and you can talk to Al. Al loves to pray with people. And according to about a month ago, Randall Jr. was saying, you give these big old hugs. He calls them bear hugs during his sermon. So hold your breath when you hug Al because he gives you a big bear hug. And so anyway, talk to Al, talk to Lillian after the service. Join us Saturday at 6 o'clock as well. Remember, every day is a gift from God. And use it wisely.
Thanks. Happy birthday, Ruben.
Yeah, happy birthday, Ruben. And thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. God bless. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Peace.